in the movie. I don't know how many of you remember that. And today, I think, will be the first instance we've had of a professor of English give us a lecture. You're in the English department and also in my
philosophy.
Arkady Plotnitsky, born in Russia, I'm not sure when he came, 1976, to the United States. Since then, he's written four books. Four of which I know, three of which are on quantum mechanics explicitly. And today he's going to tell us something about Bohr and Bayes, apparently.
I want to say a few things about the background. First of all, even though it is what Chris said, it is true, both about popcorn and that I am also an English professor. I was originally trained in mathematics and theoretical physics in the University of Leningrad, and I studied with Dorit Fadeev. So one of my fields was quantum field theory. So my first degree was from the University of Leningrad. Secondly, you know, I would like, of course, to thank Chris and all of you for coming, and some of you in this audience from whose work I benefit enormously, and with whom I had a chance to previously discuss some of these issues on various occasions. Some of them, I'm sure Chris would remember, but some of you may not remember the discussions, but they were very important. Generally, somebody like myself would be scared to death to speak to this type of audience. I'm not, because I'm pretty confident or this is right. My concern is that it may not be reasonably trivial and banal, but my hope is to say trivial things about non-trivial things. That's what I'm trying to do. And before I proceed to the actual topic of my paper, I would like to make two preliminary comments. One is by way of the prologue, what are the underground conceptual underpinning of what I'm going to discuss today in my paper. And this as follows. I believe myself that the fundamental essence of quantum mechanics, of quantum phenomena, consists in the following fact. And let me say first that by quantum phenomena, I mean what we actually observe in experiments, right? Quantum phenomena are different from classical phenomena numerically, simply by the fact that in considering quantum phenomena, the Planck's constant H cannot be neglected or disregarded. These are the phenomena which we observe and which we have to take this constant into account in one way or another. However, I also would like to distinguish quantum phenomena as something which we observe from quantum objects, which I believe we never observe. That is to say, nobody ever seen a moving photon. I have to say that I once made this claim at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign in the physics department. And some of the young people say, you don't know what you're talking about. You're an English professor. What do you know? We'll observe these photons millions every day. And I say, take me to the lab. So they took me to Kriyat's lab, and they have two little things which looks like stereo receivers, a very expensive quantum entanglement taped off experiment. And they begin to run the experiment, and you hear these clicks going on through the receiver. And they say, "This, what are the photons?" I said, "But we don't observe them. We hear the clicks." And they say, "We never look at them from that view." So I'd like to distinguish that. Now, I think that the essence of quantum mechanics, the fundamental essence of quantum theory, consists in the following fact, that identically prepared quantum experiments in general lead to different outcomes. The experiments could be identically prepared because we can identically prepare the state of the measuring instrument. That is always possible. But the fact is that if we do that, the outcome of each repeated experiment in general is different. In fact, they're almost never the same. If you take a double slit experiment with a monochromatic lamp, the basic idea is that you emit one photon by one, and they emit it from an identically prepared device, but their distribution is quite different. Now, So that is the first fact. From that point of view, one could say that quantum phenomena are essential, the outcome of quantum experiments is essentially random. However, unfortunately or fortunately, it's a little bit more complicated than that. Because quite a bit, the essence of quantum phenomena is, however, that under certain circumstances, this randomness is as it were, not completely random, right? So the probabilities of the event observed at the collective level, at least, exhibit certain pattern. And that is a very peculiar thing about quantum mechanics, that the distribution, the statistical distribution of what we observed in experiment could be different depending upon different conditions. Different essentially, because it obeys a different formula for adding probabilities of possible events, right? Like, of course, the paradigmatic example would be the double slit experiment again, in which you observe the so-called interference pattern, which is a manifestation of that fact. So these things are the represent the essence of quantum phenomena. They have nothing to do with quantum mechanics. We would observe these things regardless of the theory which accounts for them. The beauty of quantum mechanics as it is available is, of course, that it does account for this phenomena in the following sense. It predicts these probabilities exactly, right? That you get the right probability predictions in all settings, which is a peculiar feature of quantum mechanics, that it manages to take care of this difference in a different preparation. And the way it does, and that is a kind of long-term underpinning of my talk, is very peculiar because it introduces something totally new in the history of physics. It introduces the concept of what is now known as a probability amplitude. It does what it does because it has this type of device of the probability attitude, which is a complex number quantity, which does not appear in that form in classical physics ever before. And there is a rule, such as Born rule or the equivalent rules, all the subtle differences between them, of course, which allows you to move from those complex numbers to the real numbers. And it is because of that property of amplitude that a quantum mechanics is able to add these probabilities correctly, right? Because it does it by virtue of adding up in amplitude rather than adding probability. If you have two events which would each occur with certain probability in certain settings, such as if you have a device which allows you to know through which slit, let's say, a photon electron passes, then the law of probability is standard. You just add the relative probability. However, if you cannot do it, and when you observe the interference pattern, you don't add probability. You add amplitude, and then from the added amplitude, you take the square modulus, and you get the right probability. So I think, on the one hand, of course, it's a very powerful, a very beautiful and beautiful theory, and we all, or at least I love it for that unusual feature. On the other hand, one could, in principle, argue that there is something peculiar and natural about that way of relationships between the experiment and the outcome, that the mathematics of the theory account for that, and that very beautiful and interesting, but a rather unusual in some deep sense, unnatural way. Indeed, we don't really have any proper physical justification for the things like Born rule of transition from amplitude to probabilities. This rule is, as it were, as a fortunate guess, almost an ad hoc rule, right? So I think what I want to say is this, that on the one hand, I think we will always need that feature of phenomena which I described, and so far as the currently available experimental evidence is in place. On the other hand, there is really an interesting question. Are we stuck with amplitude forever, right? Or there could be an alternative way of accounting for this phenomena in predictive way without doing the amplitude. And in that sense, this talk, of course, is kind of deeply related to some of the research which is done here along the lines of the sick measurements and things of that nature, because we suggest that there might be possible just to have it in terms of working with mathematics of probabilities rather than with mathematics of amplitude. So it's my first conceptual point. The second point which I'd like to make is a historical. And I don't have the transparency for that because it's only occurred to me yesterday or last night. I was really reading something which I found is historically extraordinary. It's from Heisenberg's lectures in 1929 in Chicago. From the Morrow's book, it's on the physical principle of quantum theory, published in 1930.
Metaphysical, did you say?
No, the physical principle. They're also metaphysics, as well as mathematical. Yeah, thank you for this correction. But the physical, right? Well, it seems that Heisenberg says this in the beginning, it's the first sentence, or actually the first two sentences. The lectures which I gave at the University of Chicago in the spring of 1929 afforded me, the opportunity of reviewing the fundamental principles of quantum theory. Since the conclusive studies of Bohr in 1927, there have been no essential changes in this principle, and many new experiments has confirmed the important consequence of this theory. This statement is extraordinary because it was wrong already at the time. Not only that there were significant conceptual changes, but in fact, as I shall argue, Niels Bohr, by 1929, fundamentally changed his whole view of quantum mechanics, right? It's interesting that Heisenberg was not quite aware of it. He changes, returning closer to Heisenberg's original view. And in a certain sense, there is a deeper truth. I don't think that these principles were fixed for the next 100 years. They're not yet completely fixed in many respects, but what I found especially interesting was quite clear that by that time, there was an article rarely cited or rarely known by Bohr, published in 1929, called The Quantum of Action and the Description of Nature, in which he completely, as I shall demonstrate here, radically changed his whole understanding of quantum mechanics, right? So, and I think with that sort of long prologue, I am ready to move to the body of my paper, but I thought it would be essential to comment on that in order to proceed. My actual paper deals with the following subject. I want to critically examine. Let me just put it down. To critically examine the claim, which is extraordinarily common in the history of quantum mechanics. History of literature of quantum mechanics in both works written by philosophers as well as by physicists. Two books, which are probably the most famous two books on quantum mechanics in the history of quantum mechanics, is von Neumann and Dirac's The Principle of Quantum Mechanics, representing this view. So first of all, von Neumann, the transformation of quantum state under the action of an energy operator is purely causal. I add emphasis on purely causal. While, on the other hand, the state which may measure a given quantity undergoing measurement and non-causal change. So Dirac is even more explicit about that in his book, which is the second quotation. Is ignored for the moment the quotation on the top. I'm not sure we're going to cover it briefly. We must revise our ideas of causality. Causality applies to a system which is left undisturbed. If a system is quantum level small, I add quantum level because Dirac actually says that the system is small, meaning it's quantum, but we know now very well that quantum system could actually be big. Just a question that has to be considered as a quantum system. We cannot observe it without producing a serious disturbance, and hence we cannot expect to find any causal connection between the results of our observations. Causality will still apply to undisturbed quantum system and the equations also quantum mechanics, which will be set up to describe an undisturbed system, will be differential equations expressing a causal connections between condition and one time at condition at a later point. This equation will be in close correspondence with the equation of classical physics, and yet there is unavoidable indeterminacy which is introduced by observation. Now, it's interesting that Dirac actually introduces this idea even earlier in, I surmise, was on the Born Institute and Copenhagen at the time, that he is primarily responsible for this idea, interestingly enough. And I will explain later what is the genealogy of his idea. But I think that is the first evidence for it I found in printed literature of that kind of nature. And he said in his paper, The Physical Interpretation of the Quantum Dynamics, that one can suppose that the initial state of a system determines definitively the state of the system at any subsequent time. The notion, oh, I'm sorry, there's a missing thing. The notion of probability doesn't enter into the old, it's a Freudian slip. The notion of probability doesn't enter into the ultimate description of mechanical processes. Only when one gives some information that involves probability can one deduce results that involve probabilities, right? So I think that now what I'm going to say, I'm going to argue against this split. I'm going to argue that I'm not going to say that this claim is necessarily wrong. Let me repeat the essence of the claim. That if quantum mechanics, quantum system is left to itself and being undisturbed, it behaves causally. Once you introduce measurement, then causality disappears. I'm not going to say that this claim is wrong. I'm just going to say that I've never seen in quantum literature a good justification or explanation of this claim. Of course, I freely admit there is no way to survey all of quantum literature and foundations which is available. I suspect that the total number of works, articles, and book included as approaching the apocalypse now, at least 100,000 of items. But the I think that the examples of the key works which I'm going to list here are going to be sufficient to explain, because I had a pretty extensive perusal of the work. Moreover, in von Neumann or Dirac, I don't even see the very explanation of the term causal. For example, do they mean by causal and determine this causality in physics? Or they merely mean that the equations of quantum mechanics, such as Schrödinger equation, determine a psi function at a later time, if it determined the psi function at a given time, which claim would be reasonably uncontroversial, but they, because almost any mathematical equation is deterministic in this sense. But it's, they don't say that. So I think what I'm going to suggest that there is no justification for this claim, and I will provide the reasons why it is difficult to justify that. Now, at this point, I'm coming to Bohr, a coma lecture, which I believe was influenced significantly by Dirac's thinking, which I just cited in his 1927 article. It is not necessarily. So here is the Bohr's formulation, which influenced, I believe, both Dirac's book and von Neumann's book. And it's a famous formulation from this coma lecture, which also introduces the idea of complementarity. On the one hand, the definition of, let me cover up Heisenberg here for a second. On the one hand, the definition of the state of a physical system as ordinarily understood, that is like in classical physics, claims the elimination of all internal disturbances. But in that case, it would be impossible to observe. On the other hand, in order to make an observation possible, we permit certain interaction with suitable agencies of measurement, etc. So the very nature of quantum theory, Bohr says, thus forces us to regard the space-time coordination and the claim of causality, the union of which characterizes classical physics, as complementary but exclusive feature of the description, symbolizing the idealization of observation and definition, respectively. I'm going to skip for the moment his final moment, symbolizing the idealization, which essentially means that you can mathematize your definition in your observation. And the observation is giving the numerical data, and your definition would be made mathematical. Okay, so basically, it's the same as Schrödinger equation
provides the definition of the quantum. Now, observe that that is an interesting point, which is the center of the first part of my discussion, is that the observation and the underlying quantum process are mutually exclusive. That was actually the first complementarity introduced by Bohr. Interestingly enough, he doesn't really define the concept of complementarity in the Comma lecture. In fact, he never gives a single nailed down definition of the concept. I, for your convenience, I write down what complementarity ultimately means for Bohr, but not so much in the Comma lecture, which actually I find it problematic because he doesn't properly introduce the concept of complementarity. It's one of the Bohr's problem of reading him that he doesn't quite introduce this concept. And also, he doesn't quite acknowledge that he changes his ideas as he proceeds from one point to another. And therefore, there is a tendency to absorb it is within some vaguely defined rather than precise concept. Now, ultimately, for Bohr, this is the definition. And for the model, I want you to think not about causality and observation, but about uncertainty relations and the position and the momentum measurement, because that becomes a true example of Bohr complementarity, because he abandons that idea. I shall explain it momentarily. Within 1 year, under the influence of his early exchanges with Einstein, he completely gives up on that idea. In fact, the word causality never appears in his work after all, in that form. So he says no. But he never says that he gives up on the concept in Comma lecture. So what complementarity does in his later work, refers to mutual exclusivity of certain phenomena. Say, if you want to make a momentum measurement of the quantity P or the coordinate measurement, you cannot do it both with
the precision which is not conditioned by the uncertainty relation. So you cannot define both precisely, right? You cannot measure both precisely. However, in that sense, the exact position and momentum measurement, a footnote on that, I realize that these
uncertainty relations have nothing to do with the precision of our instruments. I'll come to that a little bit later if I have time. The uncertainty relationships presuppose ideal instruments, the instruments which actually we can never build, but they would still be valid if our instruments could measure everything with absolute precision. So on the one hand, they are mutually exclusive. That is true. These two measurements are mutually exclusive, but that's not enough to define complementarity for Bohr. What really defines complementarity is what I added here, that each of them can be performed nevertheless at the same time. It's a matter of our choice which measurement we can perform. Right? And all of these measurements, even though they cannot be performed at the same time, but when performed at different time, are necessary for a comprehensive framework for quantum theory. Now, you can see that from that point of view, the complementarity is introduced by Comma in Comma does not conform to the same definition, because you can never either have causality in terms of measurement or have an observation, because all observation will destroy causality. Okay. So from that point of view, he gives up on that, not only in terms of the causality of the underlying process, but even in principle. So it's a very important point to understand that in Bohr's ultimate understanding of complementarity, as applies to position and momentum measurement or time and energy with much greater complexities involved, the thing applies in such a way that at any given moment, you can do both. Is a measure position or is a measure momentum. We have this freedom of choice. In the first case, you really don't, because you have never freedom to observe any causality, because it's by definition is not observable. So that complementarity is not experimentally based, it's conceptually based. And that's why, to anticipate a little bit, that's one of the problems. If the causality, if the process, right, in which causality can never be observed, why, what is the origin of the claim that this behavior is causal? If this claim is true, and I think it is true, that the independent behavior of quantum objects can never be observed, here is the question. On what basis, then, one can claim this behavior to be causal? That is really the fundamental question. Now, notice that in this situation, this problem doesn't arise. In other situation of quantum mechanics, whether you deal with complementary position and momentum measurement or spin measurement, etc., you deal with possible observation, both of which could be equally performed at a given point, rather than simply with mutual exclusivity of things. In fact, it's not clear, even though I don't have time to discuss it in detail, what complementarity means here, except mutually exclusive. It says mutually exclusive but complementary, but he never explains what he means by complementary in the lecture itself. You can check it, but take my word. So I think that that is the situation which obtains in, and that is the essence of my argument. What I'm going to say, basically, then I'm going to move to von Neumann's argument in a little bit in more detail, but that is the essence of my claim, that, or my argument, that there is no reason, and I've never seen any, under these circumstances, when you claim that the observation introduces disturbance, as von Neumann, Dirac, and all of them claim, and that you say it follows, right, that the process itself is never observable, there is absolutely no reason to maintain that this process can in principle be causal. Okay? Because it isn't, now, let me tell you something that I'll come to that later, that it is true that to some degree Schrödinger, who believed also in underlying causality when he introduced his wave mechanics, but his claim was different. He in principle believed that causality could be observed. He didn't have this complementarity or this mutual exclusivity of underlying causality and observation. So in his view was different on that matter, even though he influenced all other protagonists involved in that drama of causality and quantum mechanics. But his view is different from the view which is expressed by Bohr. Yes?
In the context of your claim, when you say causality, can we understand it as determinism?
I actually forgot about it. Let me explain my terms, actually, right? Thank you. What I mean by, let me just very briefly. Incidentally, one of the reasons I forgot, because none of these people explain what they mean. But I think, I surmise what they mean is this. That if you speak about the causality in a physical sense, what I mean by causality is an ontological category, that the state of a system at a given point determines its state at any other point. Determinism I see as epistemological category, which allows us to predict exactly the state of the system at a given point if we know the state of the system at a given point, and in all other points we can't predict. One, you know, these definitions vary, but that's what I mean. I don't mean by causality, a footnote on that, by the way, that anything occurs outside the light cone or anything of that nature. Everything is consistent with the relativity within this definition of causality. I mean an ontological category following von Neumann and Bohr that the independent process is causal. While by determinism, I mean epistemological category which deals with the prediction. For example, let's take classical statistical physics. It's clearly not deterministic, but it's based on the presupposition that the behavior of individual system involved is causal. We cannot make predictions because of the underlying complexity of the system. In the case of quantum mechanics, it doesn't appear to be the case because we cannot make exact predictions concerning the behavior of individual systems.
You do think deterministically. Even though you don't use the word deterministically.
No, I don't. Only in a mathematical sense. I'll come to that later. only in a mathematical sense. It has to do, I just anticipate, with the problem of the state because of ambiguity of definition. On the one hand, it is a mathematical object. On the other hand, it has an implication of being a physical concept. Okay, thank you. Now, let me just stress a little bit more about the complementarity. I was actually observed in recent that usage of Bohr's complementarity. I think Leonard Susskind has an idea of black hole complementarity, which would apply according to this definition, but would not apply according to the second definition, because you can be either inside or outside of black hole, but you can never at a given point either perform experiment of being inside or perform experiment of being outside. And that is an absolutely crucial feature of the whole concept of complementarity in later Bohr. Now, Heisenberg gives the Bohr scheme a nice diagrammatic representation. That's what he says. That is the difference between classical and quantum physics, right? That he says that in quantum physics, you either have causal relationships expressed by mathematical law, but then physical description in space and time is impossible. That's the same thing as Bohr. Heisenberg is, interestingly enough, kind of more subtle, because he doesn't say, he only says causal relationships expressed by mathematical laws. It doesn't say just cause. I mean, part of the problem in Dirac, Bohr, and others is ambiguity of the term causal. Heisenberg is a little more subtle and ambiguous. He says the causal relationship expressed by mathematical law, which might imply that he only means the relationships of mathematical determination. That is to say that if you indeed have the wave function at a given point mathematically, you can determine it at any other point. But since this function is itself what Schrödinger called the catalog of probability, that doesn't relate to physical causality. But Bohr never subscribed to that idea. So it's not surprising, because here is the Heisenberg's paper on the uncertainty relation, which I thought, like, what for you? I think you will be interested about that, because he, in that paper, even though it influenced Bohr and was influenced by Dirac's transformation theory, which is the thing behind Dirac's formulation, I'll come to that momentarily, I hope I have enough time. This is remarkable, because he said, first he just talked about the uncertainty relation, right, in which he says that the experiment which provides such a definition itself suffered from indeterminacy, and the magnitude of this indeterminacy is given by the uncertainty relations. The title of his paper on the uncertainty relationships, incidentally, is the intuitable content of quantum mechanics, of kinematical and mechanical variable. And that is his understanding. That's what we can intuitively understand, that the measure is a one or another. Now, after that, he moves on, and he says that the presumption that behind perceived statistical world of quantum observation, there is still hides a real world in which causality holds, is a fruitless and senseless speculation. So Heisenberg doesn't subscribe to the idea of any possible causality, except maybe mathematical causality. And now then he goes further, and that I think is a remarkable quotation. The members of the Bayesian information community are going to like it, because he said quantum physics ought to describe only correlations of observations. That is his position in the uncertainty relations. And according to him, at this point, quantum mechanics established the final failure of causality. Interestingly enough, in his book, he bought into Bohr's program of 1927, and there is I'm tempted to say was almost intimidated by Bohr, but I'm not sure.
I'm trying to understand the difference, the conceptual difference between causality and determinism. I can't seem to define causality except by defining determinism.
Well, no, you can't, because in classical physics, technically, right, if you consider the, and of course in physics, we only deal with idealized model, I mean,
right. That.
If you consider the planet moving around the sun, right, it is true, of course, that is the deterministic behavior based on your predictions, but technically the model is such, but regardless of an observant, the system would in itself behave causally.
But what does it mean to behave causally?
It means that the state of the system at a given point determines the state of the system at a later point. If you have a moon moving around the sun, let's ignore perturbation and all this, how chaos theoretical complexity, right? And you can say if it's just two bodies problem, right? That the state of the moon at a given point would determine it uniquely the state of its later point, regardless whether you observe it or not.
Okay, I guess my problem is how you would ever look for that. I mean, because it seems like you can't really probe causality. Causality is just something that you
well,
is that right?
Well, it's true about quantum mechanics, but it's not true about quantum physics. Classical physics.
Right.
But classical physics causal model is all.
Well, let me ask a simpler question, because I think I'm getting off track. But you said determinism is epistemological,
yeah.
And I understand that. Causality is
ontological.
Okay.
Ontological category. Technically, this is precisely the point, in a way. Your question gets my point.
I see.
Because in classical physics, we can establish the correlation between our deterministic observation and the behavior of the system. It's not going to be possible in quantum mechanics. And just imagine that instead of just observing the moon moving with your eyes at Babylonia, every time you wanted to observe the moon, you would have to shoot a Jupiter into it. That would give you a picture which would approximate quantum mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we deal. And then study the debris of that collision and try to derive causality. And that would be very different. And that, of course, is part of my point. Why these people are talking about causality? Because there is no reason really to in any way to support this claim, given the conditions that obtain in quantum mechanics.
Right. Okay, thank you.
Can I just say, if you take the point of view of repeated experiments,
yes.
Suppose I actually set up a system in if I have some preparation,
what?
And then later on a measurement,
yes. Yeah.
And that's repeated many times,
yeah.
In that context, I can say, using the quantum formalism, that I know the initial state, and that when the measurement is, and through performing many different measurements, I can reconstruct the final state.
Can
I actually see that determinism holds at that level?
Can I postpone it after the lecture? I understand that's some great question. I'll answer it.
Right.
But let me just finish what I want to say. I'll answer it. That's a good question. The answer is no, by the way. The answer is no. It's not how it works in quantum mechanics. Right? But anyway, let me just. Now I have to accelerate. So, Chris, do I have to finish 50 minutes from 05 or finish 50 minutes from 4? Do I have another 10 minutes or 5 minutes?
Well, you at least have 10 minutes.
Okay, great. Before questions, I mean. How much better are before questions?
Well, it would be good to finish after about 50, 55 minutes.
Okay.
Which would be straight
up. Now, let me just. Because in a certain deep sense, I kind of made my point, right?
Well, I want to give another twist on that. Because of von Neumann's way of handling this situation. Because von Neumann, of course, gives a beautiful mathematical representation. I put here the whole quotation rather than abbreviated quotation. So on the one hand, he says, a state is transformed into the state under the action of the energy operator, and this transformation, he says, is purely causal and independent behavior. On the other hand, if you make a measurement, he gives you this beautiful statistical distribution, which precisely designed to capture the fact that identically prepared experiment generally lead to different outcomes. And that is the distribution of these outcomes given by a well-known formula. And that is the beautiful mathematical expression. And now the question is whether he means by causality something of a physical causality or something of the nature of only mathematical causality. It's an interesting question. I think the careful reading shows that he implies a physical causality, just as Bohr does. Because, for example, he says that the difference between two processes is a very fundamental one. Assigns from different behaviors as regard to the principle of causality, they're also different in that the former is thermodynamically reversible, while the other is not. This is a physical concept of thermodynamical reversibility. So it's not simply for von Neumann a matter of mathematics. So in other words, what von Neumann does, which is interesting because some of the people, including Greg Yeager, said, well, but he says a lot of things against causality, and this is true. In his book, he actually says that there is no causal theory of describing nature. And yet, then he maintains this claim. There is a logic which could be ascribed to that. I think what he means is this. He means that that independent behavior of individual quantum system, if they are not touched by observation, is causal. Any observation introduces non-causality. But von Neumann's interpretation of quantum mechanics is not Bayesian. It is an ensemble interpretation. So from his point of view, he agrees with Einstein to some degree. All quantum mechanics provides is an ensemble distribution, okay? And he actually says that his position is in fact similar, I hope I have this quotation, to Wolfgang Pauli. The theory predicts only the statistics of the result on the experiment when it is repeated under a given condition, like an ultimate fact without any cause. The individual outcome of measurement is, however, in general, not comprehended by law. This, which is an interesting point, it's an interesting twist. Versus the Bayesian view of quantum mechanics, to which I kind of subscribe, in which a quantum mechanics is a probabilistic theory of individual processes. Von Neumann's position, I believe, to be is this, that from his book, that the independent, undisturbed behavior of individual quantum system is causal. It is only because of our disturbances by observation we get the statistics. And in that sense, all the laws of quantum mechanics we can have will be statistical, but he does not exclude the claim. It gives us the space for the claim that each individual process can still be causal in ontological sense. It will never be deterministic because there is no way to predict it because it's not based by any observation, right? So I think in a certain sense, that is a twist which von Neumann adds on this scheme which I discussed before. Now, I want to say a few brief things with almost the speed of light about, then there's a question, where the hell that idea comes from of the causality of independent quantum processes. It seems to be that there is a good historical explanation why. When Heisenberg originally introduced his theory, incidentally, his theory, this idea was not around. Nobody talked about causality when matrix mechanics was introduced. Everyone was talking about the end of causality. In fact, Schrödinger in 1935 paper put it really nicely, I can improve of that. If the classical state doesn't exist at any moment, it can hardly change causally, he said, right? So he rejected that idea later on, right? Now, Born also never subscribed to that idea. He says, the motion of particle follows probability law, but the probability itself propagates according to the law of causality. This statement is not exactly clean either, because we have to explain he never quite does. It's a kind of poetic statement. I can teach it in my literature classes, but it's a nice metaphor, but it doesn't make it clear. I'll try if I have time to make little sense of it. Now, here is Bohr. He says, in Heisenberg theory, the attempt is made to transcribe every use of mechanical concept in a way suited to the nature of the quantum theory, and such that in every stage the computation only directly observable quantities enter. In contrast to ordinary mechanics, the new mechanic does not deal with a space-type description of the motion of atomic particle. It operates with manifolds of quantities which replace the harmonic oscillating components of the motion and only deals with these probabilities or possibilities of transition from one state to another. This quantity satisfies certain relations, etc. In other words, and it's a quite an interesting thing, but one of the changes of Heisenberg's theory from the previous Bohr-Sommerfeld model, that orbital frequencies were not represented by the theory in Heisenberg. There was no representation of orbital frequencies. There was only transitions from one state to another. It was actually, interestingly, first Dirac who realized in his version of quantum mechanics, and he addressed Q numbers, that you can find Q numbers for orbital frequencies. And then, of course, Schrödinger, with introduction of his equation, I think is primarily responsible for the idea that this transformation could in principle be caused. Because in his framework, this was based on a totally different epistemology. Because for all intents and purposes, what Heisenberg's theory did, and notice, by the way, that in his case it was nice because it would predict in terms of spectra, so you don't even have to perform the initial experiment in the same ways and in many other cases. But when Schrödinger discovered his theory, he believed that dynamics to be causal. He introduced the causal dynamics. And I think that was the primary reason. And when Dirac derived in 27 his transformation theory, which connected matrix mechanics and Schrödinger equations through a very complex scheme, he also bought into that idea of disturbance. The very term is tricky. And even though in his uncertainty relations paper, Heisenberg denied the idea of causality, he subscribed in some funny way to that idea, not of causality, but of independent quantum process, because in his microscope experiment, there was assumption that there is a moving particle which is disturbed by even a single photon and is being displaced, right? In this scheme, which I want to advocate here, such as not the case. That is to say, it seems to me that we could just give up completely the claim of causality without any change for either mathematics and the experiment. I have a quotation from Asher Peres, which shows how the uncertainty relations look from this perspective. The uncertainty relation is a very nice interpretation of the uncertainty relation. This is the best I know. In fact, Asher says strongly, it's the only correct interpretation. I wouldn't go that far. But he presents this as this interpretation. So on the present view, therefore, all we have is the result of initial observation, which specifies the state, you can call it the state vector of the wave function, which only enables the prediction and in subsequent time T1 if it performs in T0. And of course you need the Schrödinger equation to have the experiment in a different, at a different moment of time. But otherwise, the other machinery, which that is to say in von Neumann's representation, all the machinery up top has no physical, von Neumann's not representation and his formulation. All the physical machinery up top has no, all the mathematical machinery up top has no physical meaning. Its only role is to create the possibility of mathematical machinery for what they represent in the second process. Okay, that would be an interpretation. So I think I'd like to conclude by making two statements. One, that I'm not making a claim that this is the way nature works. I'm saying that this is an interpretation of quantum mechanics which I offer to you, this one, that the specification of quantum state produces the prediction. It corresponds perfectly well to the experimental fact that the outcome are probabilistic in this situation. They could never specify this thing called state, right? Is in this view, is strictly mathematical object, which has no physical meaning of any kind. The only thing which has physical meaning are the numbers which we observe here and put it in, and the probabilities which we can derive of a possible future experiment. There is further complexity to that. I'm going to skip on that a little bit, but maybe it will come up during the question. So there is nothing else. That is the kind of interpretation. And it represents, in my view, a return to Heisenberg, the original view in which the matrix element were related to the probabilities of transitions between different quantum states. There was no dynamics, causal, or any kind. There was no talk of the independent quantum processes, which are, in this view, are not observable. So the quantum state, from that point of view, is a mathematical object, and in a certain sense, to follow the Bayesian line of argument, is always mental. Because any expectations we can possibly have, of course, they could be written down, but ultimately, if I apply them, they can only be within my mind, in my view. They cannot correspond to any objective reality. On the other hand, the measurement can have an objective meaning in the sense that that specification of that quantum state could be repeated as what we observe. And I'll end here and would be happy to entertain the question. I can start with your question.
Yeah, you could.
Okay, sure. Now, in your view, on the present view, how things work, right? In your question, right? We can repeat these things many times. Now, the argument goes like this. All you can repeat is the conditions of measuring instruments, which give you no information what actually happened at this moment to a given quantum system itself. Okay, and that's one of the reasons why the outcomes are going to go is different, because the measurement does not pertain to the state of quantum object itself, but only to the state of the measuring instrument, which could be specified repeatedly. But there is no way to assure that the conditions of quantum object itself could ever be repeated. So from that point of view, that's why I'm saying that my answer to your question is no. One of the reasons why we have a statistical nature of quantum mechanics in part has to do with that the initial measurement specified only the states of the interaction between the object and the measuring instrument, but doesn't specify the state of the quantum object itself. So from that point of view, from the present position, there would be no possibility to establish ever an ontological claim concerning the behavior of quantum objects. That would be my answer.
But we have a procedure to go from the operational states,
yes,
of the experimental apparatuses to these objects, these mathematical objects that represent the state of the system in our formalism.
No, they don't represent the physical state of the system in the present view. The mathematical formalism does not represent the physical state of the system. There is no such representation. The mathematical formalism only provides an algorithm, as Schrödinger says, the catalog of probabilities for future predictions on the basis of experiments which have been already performed. It does not provide any, that's the whole point of the present argument, that Schrödinger equation does not describe, or any other mathematical machinery of quantum mechanics does not describe the state of quantum system. This is why, if we had a framework in which only probabilities would be involved and would be no quantum state, this question would not even arise.
you would have the conditional probabilities, and you would not talk about quantum state, which is a misnomer to begin with, because of this ambiguity of a mathematical object, a vector in a Hilbert space, and a and something which refer to the state by the very term state. So that's why, because that's not that move, that somehow many repeated measurements. This is true in classical physics. Babylonians knew that. If you have, Pauli actually talks about that in the laboratory board. He says, look, if you do the measurements here, right, and then do many repeated measurements, it allows you to improve your prediction if you have a good mathematical equation. But that doesn't happen in quantum mechanics, as Pauli says, because a repeating measurement doesn't help you to improve on a previous measurement. It sets up a completely new situation of measurement. Okay, so in quantum mechanics, technically, if you have the wave function, and you say, okay, it happens here, and then, see, in quantum mechanics, let me put it like this, you cannot connect the dots. The dots are not connected. Right? If you have the wave function here, you presented T1, that's fine. And then if you verify your experiment here, that's an entirely new setup of the experiment, and everything is Schrodinger's so begins Ebola from the very beginning. The previous experiment doesn't help you in establishing, in tracking the behavior of the quantum system. So there's you can repeat. In fact, the repetition which you're talking about is irrelevant from that point of view. The repetition of the same experiment will not help you to improve your predictions. If you have an experiment which you repeat many times, you already have the probability distribution provided from the wave function. You can repeat it zillions of times. It doesn't make any difference.
Can I just, I think I don't know if I've expressed the question clearly enough. In classical physics, I can make a preparation and then later on measurements. So I'm measuring state at the beginning and the end. I have a mathematical formalism that tells me how the initial state
in classical physics, right.
And I can see that this actually corresponds with the experiment. So that leads me to say, well, I've got this epistemological idea of determinism, and it seems reasonable to infer that reality seems to be causal. Now, I can do the same thing in quantum theory, except that now the state refers to level of statistics, not to the individual experiment, but to repetitions of the experiment. So psi initial goes deterministically to psi final in my mathematics, and that corresponds, if I believe that, and if I act on that belief and write my mathematics in that way, then that does actually correspond with predictions that I made.
It doesn't.
So I have reason to go from the fact that the mathematics works and the fact that the mathematics is deterministic to the conclusion that the reality underlying it is causal. Now, you're saying that's not valid. That's not a valid inference.
Yes, I...
I don't understand why.
Well, listen, I respect your feeling. But the point is precisely because in classical physics, if you deal with an individual system, the disturbance, the probability distribution in the end of the process could be finagled, so you could ignore that it is statistical. It's not possible to do in quantum mechanics. It's never possible because the statistical, you can say that the dispersion is too wide in quantum mechanics to apply that idea which you want to transfer from classical physics, because in classical physics, look, in classical physics, the equations of classical physics do two things. They describe the behavior of the system, and on the basis of this description, they predict this behavior. Better or worse, in ideal cases, predict it exactly. Now, in quantum mechanics, and that's why people talk about the mysteries of quantum mechanics, the description is always a problem because it's not verifiable. What is verifiable, only predictability. So in quantum theory, the equations predict, but they don't describe anything. In fact, they don't even describe the state of measuring states. These are described by classical physics. And that's why this intuition,
which leads to all these claims, which I think also led Schrödinger to some degree, is misleading in my view in quantum mechanics, because there is no evidence for anything in experiment which corresponds to this intuition. That would be my answer.
So
Chris?
Yeah. I think Rob had a question.
Yeah. Yes.
But then I want to go too.
Yeah, okay.
I want to go actually.
Rob.
Yes.
So you made a distinction between causality and determinism.
Mm-hmm.
So as I understand it, causality is the claim that the physical state at time t determines the physical state at time t.
All right.
And you would take determinism to be the way Laplace defined it, some sort of omniscient being who knew everything about the physical state at time t, could predict everything about the physical state at time t prime.
All right. Yeah. In a way.
So in the classical world, I claim one is true if and only if the other is true.
Yeah, that's
so why draw the distinction?
What? They draw the distinction.
Do you agree that they're the same?
Well, ultimately, yes. The distinction is in classical is practical. Because in the case of statistical physics, I mean, unless you are the Laplace demon, you cannot do that. Okay, like when you toss a coin, and unless you assume that quantum physics is involved, technically, if you write down all the processes, right, which are involved, how your hand moves, you could get, if not exact, but pretty close to the exact predictions of how the coin will fall, because it's a classical object. But it's just the conditions are so complicated that we cannot in practice do that. So I would say that the toss of the coin is a causal event, but it's not deterministic because we cannot track the behavior to make the predictions. If you are a Laplace omniscient being, then you can do it. So in principle, you're right. In principle, there is no distinction in classical physics. But for example, if you take the chaos theoretical systems, they also technically causal, but we can't really make deterministic predictions because of sensitivity to initial. It's a practical distinction, but it's useful because in a certain sense, you can say that quantum mechanics is quasi-deterministic because it predicts the probabilities exactly. But it has no claim of causality. But of course, it's not deterministic. So I don't see, I accept your point, but I don't see it as a problem. Because my ultimate point is, okay, so the quantum theory is neither deterministic nor causal. Doesn't matter for my main point. But I accept the point. Yes, please.
So here's what I propose to do. I'd like to re-answer Nick's question in language that I think is more common to this community, but I think carries the essence of what you said, and then at the same time respond to Rob's question. So this is my challenge. So you make a distinction between causal and deterministic, and I think what you're trying to capture is something like this. Let us consider classical mechanics.
Chris, just a second. Before you proceed, I'm waiting to hear what you say. But this distinction is not important for my claim concerning quantum mechanics.
So,
as I said, quantum mechanics is neither causal nor deterministic.
Let's take classical physics, but written in Liouvillean form.
Right.
So a Liouvillean state over a phase space represents an epistemic state. It represents our state of knowledge.
Yeah.
And the idea of determinism is that if I specify the Liouville distribution at one time, that will uniquely determine the Liouville distribution at a later time. That's an epistemic concept. We are accustomed to thinking that this determinism in Liouvillean evolution is underwritten. It's supported by Hamiltonian mechanics underneath it. And that is that the actual phase space point is following a determined track. That's an optic idea. So we usually think of the epistemic evolution as underwritten by an optic causality. So I think that's the distinction
that
our kind
of trying
to get at.
Yeah, that's
but we need not, in fact.
That's right.
There's no logical necessity to say that the Liouvillean determinism is underwritten by causality. physical causality.
It's a convenient fiction, I like to say.
Yes. And in fact, Schrodinger had played with this idea before quantum mechanics came along. He imagined that one could have Lyapunov mechanics without Hamiltonian mechanics. It seems like a contradiction to our to the way we usually think, but it's not. Okay, now coming to Rob's, to what Rob said, I think I myself would deny the idea that just because I have epistemic certainty, I wouldn't say that then there must be an element of reality underwriting the epistemic certainty. Well, I would deny that. You said it was it.
I would too, Chris.
Good, just for the record.
Well, it depends. I think that there are classical systems where that claim of which I explained in the behavioral sense of where this claim originate concerning causality and where it is reasonable to connect both versus classical physics versus classical statistical physics, where we don't know. Secondly, one of the reasons that I introduced that is because these people do use the term causal, by which they clearly mean ontological causality. So by definition, if you say the process is causal but unobservable, that means that category is ontological rather than epistemic. Of course, causality is an epistemic category, ultimately, as Kant pointed out. But in that context, that's how it works. But let me just stress, it's actually not important for the point which I want to make in about quantum mechanics, because in that case, neither claim would apply. Some people, as Chris just did, reverse it and say, well, we cannot be sure about causality in the classical system, and that is true. But in a relatively large class of individual, of the models for individual system, this claim is reasonably applicable and uncontroversial about the ontological causality. The reason for that is, in part, that in classical physics we have this great temptation, Chris has the opposite temptation at this point, to get rid of the observer. So we want to describe systems as behaving in themselves, and therefore we want to apply the category of causality, which is kind of ontological, while determinism is tend to be more. But I freely admit that these claims are often used the other way around. I mean, Feynman says that Schrodinger equation is completely deterministic. He doesn't explain what he means, basically. But that's part of my point in this paper, that I see these claims all the time, and maybe if you see them later on in all this literature on quantum mechanics, it would raise your suspicion, although in this audience, you're probably already very suspicious about these claims to begin with. Yes?
I'm trying to understand what it exactly is that you're denying. So let's think about an atom. Let me sketch three or four points of view that someone might hold. Maybe you can tell me if any of them is the point of view that you hold. So the first point of view would be there really is no atom at all. All there is our instruments and the readings of our instruments that we talk about in terms of atoms.
Well, that's not the claim I would make.
A second point of view might be the atom exists, but there's no such thing as the state of the atom at any given time. The third point might be the atom exists. The state of the atom exists, but it evolves in some non-deterministic, non-causal way, using your language. So are any of those three?
No.
So,
I can.
What answer would you?
Yeah,
give?
Sure. Atoms. Let's talk about electrons for the moment. Atoms doesn't matter. They do exist, but in this interpretation, right? There is no way to specify the mode of their existence.
So that's like saying the atom exists, but its state doesn't exist. Is that
no? No, because you can say that its state existed in a certain sense, that atom could exist at a certain moment of time, but there is no concept of state which we can form concerning the atoms. It's certainly not on the model of classical physics.
I don't see much difference between. So you're saying the atom exists, we can't form a concept of it.
Right.
The state exists, maybe, we can't form a concept of it.
Yeah, but we can make predictions if we make measurements upon the atom concerning future possible measurements.
I'm sympathetic with what Raphael said. We can say that the atom exists, but we wouldn't say that its physical state exists.
Yeah, but I agree with that. That's what I said.
I thought you agreed with that. Yeah. Then you said you didn't.
Well, the problem is because you don't have the concept of the concept when you say, I would agree with that. We cannot, Chris, it's the same what I said.
Dynamically changing property intrinsic to
this. We cannot specify the state of the atom in any given way. That's what I said. And I think that may be the same.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that it doesn't have a state.
We don't know. It's like God, you know, I'm being agnostic about that.
Right.
But so far, right, and there are reasons to think. It's not only a question of causality and something which I didn't have time to discuss. It's also a question, a concomitant question.
Well, then, was it that Raphael's statement was slightly too strong for you? Because he said, we have atoms exist, but their physical states do not. And you would rather be agnostic and say, atoms exist, we don't know about physical states.
Yeah. But then you could also leave it open that the states exist and evolve causally. And you just don't know.
That's certainly true. I mean, listen, I don't know. I'm only saying that the currently available experimental evidence, this particular interpretation of quantum mechanics, does not facilitate the conceptions of causally evolving quantum state. What happens in the future, we cannot know. It's possible that at some point something will be observed which will throw out the whole thing. Of course it's possible. But that's not in, not yet.
Something I don't understand really why, how we can come to a definite conclusion about whether a state exists or not. I mean, it seems to me that you have as a fixed thing the observable content of the theory, and then you have a whole range of possible. What in the end are calculational schemes, but I mean, we like to think of these, like to give them flesh and think that this is reality, which some of which are quite deterministic or causal in some sense, like the pilot wave theory, and another extreme, Feynman's path integrals, where the state of the system would, for an electron, for instance, would be just a fixed position, and this moves around absolutely arbitrarily, so there would be no determinism at all. And but the point is that it seems to me that whether a state exists is our choice.
Well, I don't believe that. Well, it is, of course, it is your choice, but I have
state,
to say...
But then you can't definitely know. But.
Well, I mean, it goes back to this previous question. Look, I mean, it's true that we have a natural tendency, especially given the history of classical physics, to think in the terms you suggested. And it is true that in Bohmian theories, this machinery applies to some degree. It things are quite a bit more complicated than Feynman's view of the situation in terms of Passer integral, et cetera. And I think that there was a discussion between him and Bohr on that subject, so I'm not going to go into that. My point, however, is this, right? That there is quantum mechanics does not enable you to specify the state of a quantum object itself. It only enables you to specify the state, the measurement which you can perform on this object, and then specify the probabilities of predictions concerning future experiments. That's why Einstein didn't like it, because for him quantum mechanics in that interpretation was not physics. It doesn't describe the behavior of quantum systems. It only describes the outcome of the future possible experiment on the previously performed experiments. Yeah.
Well, so your claim is that that quantum physics is non-deterministic, but it's non-causal, but not necessarily. The non-determinism implies the non-causality. That's not what you're talking about.
you know, now understand I have a sympathetic with von Neumann and others who didn't explain what they meant by that. It is neither one, right? In my definition of things, not the lack of causality implies the impossibility of determinism. Well, it's not, yeah, but I don't, yeah, but can you sort of, what is the bottom line of your question?
Talking about evolutions of epistemic objects, right?
I never used that phrase.
Well, the state, you're saying quantum mechanics.
No, I see this. Other people claim that state evolves. I never claimed that state evolves. It makes no such claim.
The tie vector.
It doesn't evolve. It evolves in mathematics.
You evolve it mathematically.
Yeah, I accept that I didn't even use that language that it evolves. As I say, the Schrödinger equation is a means to establish, it's not even that.
Well, and perhaps the question is relevant to a slide that you put up,
yeah.
The Heisenberg slide. Can you put that back?
Sure. Which one?
The one that had all of Heisenberg and some separated components.
You mean the diagram or
no, the one?
The one with on the uncertainty relation. Oh, I think
physics ought to just describe only correlations of observations, and quantum mechanics establishes the final failure of causality. How are those two completely unrelated statements? I mean, to a basis.
Well, they are in themselves they are unrelated, but if you look at the rest of the quotations,
I mean, the first statement is epistemological.
Yes, of course.
The second is ontological.
Yeah, this.
If they're incompatible, I just said they're different categories. I mean,
to
say that one implies the other would be.
They're not completely incompatible. They're different. Doesn't mean that they're incompatible. Different categories doesn't mean that they're incompatible. They could be compatible. Now, if you just read these two samples from Heisenberg, then of course you can ask this type of question. But if you look on everything which he says, he basically makes two claims. First, in fact, would be better to reverse these two sentences. That he basically makes two claims. They are giving the uncertainty relations, in his view, the causality or determinism are not possible. No, look, that's why I use causality.
But I would also disagree, but the uncertainty relations are again, expressed, right? I mean, it's about measurements. I mean, you're talking about standard deviations of measurements.
No, I understand.
And because you expect a standard deviation in a measurement doesn't impose some natural fluctuations in nature.
Yes,
so I don't think, I don't see how you can make a claim about causality from anything to do with uncertainty.
I actually can, in the following sense. Deal with the model. The reason that in classical, we're dealing with physical model. The reason that in classical physics, when you deal with individual systems, the behavior is causal as well as deterministic is precisely because you can simultaneously measure causal position. But in quantum mechanics, you cannot do that.
But why not? Can you explain that?
I think I can answer a little bit of this question. I think quickly. I would say this, that the structure of one's epistemology puts constraints on one's ontology. a good example. Suppose you buy into the Bayesian idea of the quantum space, which is space knowledge, yada, yada, yada. Then one can say, suppose I adopt the structure of quantum mechanics. That structure tells me that it is not compatible to believe in local hidden variable theories. If I'm going to adopt this structure for my epistemic states, that's not compatible with an ontology of local hidden variables. So there's an example where the structure of epistemic states does at least constrain to some extent the ontology. I think what you're worried about is that this sort of statement is far too sweeping.
Right, it's very general.
It is a little bit, actually, but I would answer actually differently, because uncertainty relations are, of course, the consequence of quantum mechanics, but they're also the law of nature. That is to say, you can establish them apart from quantum mechanics, as the quotation from Peres suggests. Okay, so therefore, just a moment, there is no experiment which we can perform in quantum mechanics, with quantum phenomena where the Planck constant plays a role, right? Which allows us to make any deterministic predictions, right? Concerning the state of the system. Therefore, the claim of causality is, I said many times that I'm not saying that this claim is wrong. I'm saying that there is no explanation which provides why it could be true. That is my point. Okay, well, in the present interpretation, what I'm saying is this. I don't know it's possible that there is godlike causality at the quantum level. Who knows? But on the basis of all the data I have, and not only the structure of the theory, which helps additionally, but the structure which is both epistemological and ontological, because quantum phenomena, as I said from the outset, have ontological status on this interpretation. They presume to exist outside the position of the pointer, things of that nature, we observe them, right? They're there. In that structure, there is no way from which you could derive deterministic prediction. Remember, before I started my talk, I said, the fundamental fact of quantum mechanics is that identically prepared experiment in general lead to different recordings of data. And from that point of view, right, there is no reason to presume that the evolution of independent quantum system is possible. That's all.
We should take this pause to thank our colleagues. You guys can push this.
That's a good moment to stop. I'm glad.
It's the difficulty of being a chairman. You have to constantly wait for talks.